The kingdom of Aurelian had once been known as the Moon's Garden. Before betrayal, poisoned bloodlines, and ambition-consumed loyalty, House Vale ruled the kingdom. The royal wolves were beloved. Not for their strength. The kings and queens of House Vale walked among their people as though the kingdom belonged to everyone. Perhaps that was why the kingdom loved them in return. And perhaps that was why someone decided they had to die. Rain fell heavily on the night Aurelian burned. Lightning split the sky above the capital. Thunder rolled across the mountains. Inside the royal palace, servants hurried through candlelit corridors while guards doubled patrols along the walls. Something felt wrong. No one could explain it, yet everyone felt it. Queen Celeste Vale felt it most of all. She stood beside a nursery window overlooking the rain-soaked city below. Her daughter slept peacefully in a carved cradle, only 6 months old. The queen watched the infant for a long moment, then gently brushed a strand of pale hair from the baby's forehead. A strange ache tightened inside her chest. The feeling refused to leave. Footsteps approached behind her. The queen turned. King Rowan Vale entered the nursery. Water glistened on his cloak. His expression immediately deepened her unease. What happened? Rowan closed the door. For several seconds he simply looked at their daughter, as though memorizing her. The sight chilled her. The eastern gates were breached. The words landed heavily. Celeste stared at him. The palace gates had never been breached. Not once, not in generations. By whom? The king's jaw tightened. People we trusted. The queen slowly looked toward the sleeping child. Understanding arrived. Cold, terrible, final. It has begun. Rowan nodded. Neither panicked. Royal wolves understood responsibility, and responsibility often demanded impossible choices. The king crossed the room. His gaze never left his daughter. There's still time. Not for us, the words emerged softly. Neither pretended otherwise. The attack had been planned carefully, the betrayal too deep. The palace would fall before dawn. They both knew it. The king's throat tightened. Not from fear, from grief, because he could accept death. What he could not accept was leaving his child alone in the world. A soft knock interrupted the silence. The door opened. An elderly wolf entered. Commander Benedict Ashcombe, captain of the Royal Guard, protector of three generations of House Vale. The old warrior looked exhausted. Blood stained one sleeve. His face carried the terrible certainty of a man who already knew the outcome of the battle. The western passage remains open. The queen closed her eyes. The time had come. No parent should ever face such a moment. No parent should ever be asked to choose between holding their child and saving them. Yet fate rarely asks permission before becoming cruel. Rowan lifted the infant from her cradle. The baby stirred, tiny fingers wrapped around his thumb, completely unaware that an entire kingdom was collapsing around her. The king almost broke. Almost. Instead, he kissed her forehead, then placed her gently into Benedict's arms. The old warrior froze. No! His voice cracked. Your Majesty, you swore an oath. Benedict's eyes filled instantly. The king's own remained bright with unshed tears. You swore House Vale would survive. The old wolf looked down at the child. The last heir, the last hope, the last piece of a dying kingdom. Outside, distant screams echoed through the palace. The battle had reached the inner grounds. Time was running out. The queen stepped forward. She removed a silver pendant from around her neck, a crescent moon surrounded by flowering vines, the symbol of House Vale. For centuries it had belonged to queens. Tonight it became something else, a promise. She fastened it carefully around her daughter's neck, then kissed her one final time. The baby smiled, a simple, innocent smile, the kind only children possess. The queen nearly shattered. But she stepped back because if she held her daughter again, she would never let go. And if she never let go, the child would die, Benedict understood. The old warrior's hands trembled as he adjusted the blanket around the infant. Then slowly, painfully, he bowed to the child, to the future. To the kingdom he was about to carry into darkness. I will find her alive. Rowan nodded. That is all we ask. The commander turned. Each step toward the door seemed heavier than the last. Then he paused, just once, looking back, memorizing them. The king standing beside the queen holding his hand, two wolves about to sacrifice everything for their child. The image would haunt him for the rest of his life. Then he left, and carried the future into the storm. The palace fell before dawn. Fire consumed the western towers. The royal banners burned. The city wept. By sunrise, House Vale was declared extinct. The kingdom mourned, the traitors celebrated, and history recorded the end of a bloodline. But history was wrong, because far beyond the burning capital, beneath relentless rain and thunder, an old wolf rode through the darkness carrying a sleeping child. A child no one would ever stop hunting. A child who would grow believing she was ordinary. A child who would one day be rejected. Exiled. Forgotten. And then discover that an entire kingdom had been stolen from her before she was old enough to speak her own name. Her name was Seraphine Vale, and the story of how she lost everything had only just begun. Chapter 1. The Rejection Ceremony. The morning Seraphine turned 18, she woke before sunrise, not from excitement, from fear. It had lived beneath her skin for weeks, quiet and relentless. Everyone said the mate ceremony was the happiest day of a wolf's life, the day destiny revealed itself and lonely futures became shared ones. But happiness had always seemed to find other people first. She sat in the small attic room of her aunt and uncle's farmhouse, listening to winds scrape across the roof. The room was cold, sparsely furnished with a bed, a trunk, a cracked mirror, and a patched blanket. She lived here, but she had never truly belonged. A faint grey light slipped through the window. She opened the trunk and touched the pale blue dress she had spent 6 months sewing by hand. Every coin saved, every stitch completed by lantern light after everyone slept. A small smile surfaced, then vanished. What if he doesn't choose me? The question cut deep. She stared into the mirror. Long chestnut hair, grey-blue eyes, a face people called pleasant, never chosen first. Closing her eyes, she forced herself to breathe. Maybe today would be different. Maybe today someone would finally see her as more than a burden. The hope felt fragile enough to break. By midday, the village square overflowed with celebration. Banners fluttered, lanterns swayed overhead. Seraphine stood near the edge of it all, alone. Most people were kind enough, few were cruel, but nobody looked for her. Nobody saved her a place. She had always existed on the outskirts of other people's happiness. Seraphine! Relief washed through her instantly. Mira pushed through the crowd, dark curls, bouncing energy radiating from every step. You're hiding again. I'm standing, near the edge, Mira said. Which is hiding, despite herself, Seraphine laughed. Mira studied her face and softened. You're nervous, maybe. Everyone is. Not like this. Concern replaced amusement. Mira stepped closer. Listen to me. Seraphine met her gaze. If he's your mate, he'll be lucky. Emotion tightened her chest, because Mira meant it. Thank you, she whispered. Mira squeezed her hand. You'll see. Seraphine wished she shared that certainty. The ceremony began at sunset. Gold and violet painted the mountains as wolves gathered around the moon altar. Excitement faded into anticipation. The moment had arrived. Among the young wolves stood Tristan Hale, future Alpha. Strong, admired, confident. The boy Seraphine had secretly loved for nearly 3 years she had never told anyone. Not even Mira. Loving someone who barely noticed her felt humiliating. Yet the possibility that Tristan might be her mate had carried her through countless lonely nights. Now fate would decide. Ancient blessings echoed across the square. Names were called, matches formed. Laughter and tears mingled as dreams came true. Then, Seraphine Ash. Her heart slammed against her ribs. She stepped forward. For one brief moment, every eye was on her without judgment, without shame. Then another name followed. Tristan Hale. A murmur swept through the crowd. Tristan stepped forward. Their eyes met, and the bond stirred. The moon goddess had spoken. Gasps spread through the square. Hope exploded inside her. The future Beta and quiet Seraphine. Unexpected, but real. For one breathtaking second, she believed everything was about to change. Then Tristan's expression shifted, and her blood turned cold, because instead of happiness, she saw disappointment. No, please, anything but that. The elder smiled warmly. Tristan Hale, do you accept the bond gifted by the moon goddess? Silence, too long. The square grew uneasy. Tristan stared at her, and suddenly she understood. Before he spoke, before anyone else realized, he didn't want her. The realization shattered something inside her. Tristan, the elder prompted. His jaw tightened. Embarrassment flashed across his face. Then frustration. Then resentment. As though this tragedy belonged to him. The entire square held its breath. I reject the bond. The words struck like a blade. Silence crashed over the crowd. Seraphine stared at him, unable to comprehend what she'd heard. Then he spoke again. I reject her. Gasps erupted. Whispers spread instantly. The world blurred around her. The elder looked horrified. Tristan, reconsider. No, his voice rang clear across the square, cruel in its certainty. I won't be bound to a girl with no status. Every word hit harder than the last. I have responsibilities. I have a future. Nobody interrupted. Nobody stopped him. That hurt too. I need a mate who strengthens my position. His gaze flicked to her, brief, dismissive. As harsh as it sounds, Seraphine offers nothing. The words echoed through her. Offers nothing, nothing. The crowd disappeared into a haze of faces and whispers. She had feared rejection. But reality was worse, because hope had existed first, and hope always made heartbreak sharper. Tears burned behind her eyes. She refused to let them fall. Not here. Not in front of him. The elder's voice finally broke through the silence. The bond is severed. A strange pressure vanished from her chest. The mate connection disappeared, gone, as though it had never existed. The emptiness left behind felt endless. The ceremony continued, because ceremonies always continued. Life always continued. Only the wounded were left behind. Seraphine stood frozen for a moment before turning away. No speech, no protest, only silence. The most painful kind, because sometimes heartbreak wasn't loud. Sometimes it was the quiet realization that every fear you carried had been right all along. And as whispers followed her through the crowd, one terrible truth settled into her heart. Being alone had always hurt. But being unwanted was far worse. Chapter 2. The Sentence. The walk home felt endless. Behind her, music still drifted from the village square. Laughter echoed through the night. Life continued as though nothing had happened. As though her heart hadn't been broken before hundreds of witnesses. Seraphine kept walking, one step after another. If she stopped, she feared she would finally cry. Fragments of the ceremony haunted every step. Tristan's face, his voice, the pity in the crowd's eyes afterward, the relief that it wasn't happening to them. She pressed a trembling hand against her chest. The mate bond was gone, not because she had lost Tristan, because she had lost hope. Hope that someone would choose her. Hope that she belonged somewhere. Hope that all the lonely years had been leading towards something. Now she wasn't sure what remained. The ash farmhouse appeared ahead, dark beneath the moonlit sky. A lantern glowed in the kitchen window. Her aunt would already know. Everyone would know. Humiliation traveled fast in Ashmore. The door creaked as she stepped inside. Martha Ash sat waiting at the table. She didn't rise. Didn't ask if Seraphine was all right. Her expression was already hard. You embarrassed us. The words struck harder than expected. Not because they surprised her, because some foolish part of her had hoped for kindness, just once. I'm sorry. The apology escaped automatically. Years of habit, years of making herself smaller. Martha scoffed. Sorry, you stood before the entire pack and got rejected. Seraphine lowered her gaze. Arguing never helped. The Hale family is furious. The elders have been talking all evening. Something in her aunt's tone made fear crawl through her chest. What do you mean? The pack needs stability. The answer made little sense. Not yet. The future Alpha rejected you. Now people are talking. Talking about what? Martha hesitated. Bad luck. Seraphine stared. What? Some say you've carried it ever since you arrived. Arrived. The word always hurt. She had no memories of her parents. Only fragments and unanswered questions. No one could ever agree how they died. Only that she survived. A traveling soldier had carried her to Ashmore as an infant and left before dawn. Her uncle Thomas Ash had taken her in. He had been kind, made room for her, fed her, treated her like family. After his death 6 years earlier, everything changed. You should never have been matched to Tristan, Martha said. The word stung because part of Seraphine feared they might be true. Fate itself had chosen them. Yet destiny had proven weaker than status and ambition. I didn't ask for this. Martha laughed bitterly. You think life cares what you asked for? Silence settled between them, then came three sharp knocks. Every muscle in Seraphine's body tightened. Visitors this late never brought good news. Martha opened the door. Three elders stood outside, the oldest wolves in Ashmore. None looked pleased. Fear immediately gripped her throat. May we enter? The eldest asked. The elder stepped inside with the slow certainty of judges arriving to deliver a verdict. Something terrible was coming. Seraphine felt it instantly. The eldest turned toward her. His eyes looked tired, regretful, which somehow felt worse than cruelty. Seraphine, her hands clenched. Yes? He exhaled heavily. Recent events have created considerable unrest. The word started practice. Prepared. This decision had already been made. We believe it would be best if you left Ashmore. The world stopped. What? His expression tightened. You are to be exiled. The word echoed through her mind. Exiled. Impossible. Her knees nearly gave out. She grabbed the chair beside her. No! The whisper broke apart. I haven't done anything. The elder looked away. And that told her everything. He knew it. They all knew it. She wasn't guilty. That simply didn't matter. Please, her voice trembled. I've lived here my entire life. No one answered. Only silence. Merciless silence. Tears burned behind her eyes. Not from Tristan. Not from heartbreak. From disbelief. Where am I supposed to go? Again, silence. Everyone knew what winter meant beyond Ashmore's borders. Exile wasn't relocation. It was a death sentence. The elder finally spoke. You have until sunrise. The cruelty nearly stole her breath. One night, one final night to leave behind everything she had ever known. Then the elders turned and walked out. The door closed behind them. Silence flooded the farmhouse. Seraphine stood frozen, numb, broken. Alone, then something inside her shattered. The tears came. Years of loneliness, years of trying, years of hoping. All of it collapsed at once, because no matter how hard she worked, no matter how kind she tried to be, no matter how carefully she lived, it had never been enough. Outside, the moon hung high above Ashmore. Cold, distant, watching, as a girl who had already lost one family prepared to lose another. And before dawn arrived, someone very small would come looking for her, the only person in the entire pack who could not bear to see her leave. Chapter 3. The Road of Snow and Silence. Seraphine did not sleep. How could she? Every creak of the farmhouse, every gust against the windows, reminded her that sunrise was coming, and with it, exile. She sat beneath the slanted attic ceiling, staring at the open trunk holding everything she owned. Three dresses, a blanket, a comb, a sewing kit, a faded book of poems. 18 years reduced to a single box. The realization hurt more than she expected. By morning, her entire life could disappear without anyone needing more than a wagon. Outside, snow drifted across the fields. The world beyond the glass looked cold, endless, and merciless. A soft knock broke the silence. Seraphine frowned. The knock came again, 3 tentative taps. She opened the door. And her heart broke all over again. Evie stood there, bundled in an oversized coat, dark curls escaping beneath a knitted cap. Snow dusted her shoulders and tears already filled her amber eyes. Evie, the little girl threw herself into Seraphine's arms. For several seconds, she simply held on, as if letting go would make everything real. Seraphine knelt. "You're supposed to be asleep." Evie shook her head fiercely. "No." The certainty in her voice tightened Seraphine's throat. Unlike everyone else, Evie looked devastated. The child had cried for her. The realization was almost unbearable. "They can't make you leave." Seraphine brushed a curl from her face. "They can." "No." A tiny fist clenched. "They can't. Evie, I told my father. He said rules are rules." Anger flashed across the child's face. "I hate rules." Despite everything, a faint smile touched Seraphine's lips. Only Evie could manage that. The little girl reached into her pocket and carefully removed a small wooden wolf. Crude, uneven, clearly handmade. She held it out with both hands. "I made it." Emotion tightened Seraphine's chest. One ear sat crooked. The tail was too large. It was beautiful. "What's it for?" she whispered. Evie sniffled. "So you won't be alone." The words landed softly and shattered something inside her, because this was kindness, pure and uncomplicated. The thing she had spent her entire life searching for, and it came from a 7-year-old child. Seraphine accepted the carving with trembling fingers. "Thank you." Neither spoke for a while. Then Evie climbed onto the small stool beside the bed. The movement confused Seraphine, until the child quietly handed her a ribbon. Understanding hit immediately. Every Sunday after service, Seraphine braided Evie's hair. They had done it for years. Neither remembered when the tradition started, only that it had become theirs. Evie sat very still. Seraphine stood behind her. Her fingers moved automatically through dark curls. Twist, fold, weave. The familiar rhythm steadied them both. Neither mentioned that this might be the last time. Some griefs were too large to name aloud. Evie's lower lip quivered. "Will you come back?" The question pierced straight through her heart. She didn't know. Most exiles never returned. Many never survived, but she couldn't tell the child that. So she offered a small, merciful lie. "I'll try." Evie nodded, satisfied. Then hugged her once, twice, 3 times. At the doorway she paused. "I'll miss you." The words lingered long after she disappeared downstairs. For the first time that night, Seraphine cried, not for Tristan, not for Ashmore, for a little girl who loved her enough to say goodbye. Dawn arrived too quickly. Snow covered the fields in pale silver light. Seraphine carried her trunk downstairs. Martha sat at the kitchen table. She never looked up, never offered help, never said goodbye. And somehow that silence hurt less than it once would have, because during the night Seraphine had finally understood. People who wanted you gone were not family. She set her trunk beside the door and waited. Nothing happened. No farewell, no apology, no regret. Finally she opened the door herself. Cold air rushed inside, sharp, biting, alive. She stepped outside. The door closed behind her, and 18 years ended with the sound of a latch. The village was already awake. Windows cracked open. Curtains shifted. Whispers followed her through the snow. No one approached. No one intervened. The same wolves who had smiled at her yesterday now pretended not to know her. Seraphine kept walking. Seraphine kept walking. The trunk grew heavier with every step as snow crunched beneath her boots. Ahead, the border stones marked the end of Ashmore and the beginning of wilderness. Beyond them waited only mountains, forest, and winter. Fear tightened around her chest, the kind that whispered, "You are going to die alone." Then she remembered Evie's carved wolf. Seraphine slipped a hand into her pocket and wrapped her fingers around the small wooden figure. The simple touch steadied her. One person would remember. One person cared. Perhaps that wasn't much, but it wasn't nothing. At sunrise, she crossed the border stones. No guards stopped her. No one followed. With a single step, Seraphine Ash ceased to belong anywhere. The realization should have broken her. Instead, it left behind a strange freedom. No expectations, no pack, only the road ahead. Far beyond the mountains, destiny was already moving, and Alpha was returning home, a widowed ruler carrying more grief than hope. A man who had no idea the girl destined to change his life was walking toward him through the snow. Neither knew it yet, but fate had already begun closing the distance, and winter was about to test them both. Chapter 4: The Winter That Wanted Her Dead. By midday, Seraphine could no longer feel her toes. The road had vanished beneath endless snow. Her trunk became impossible to carry, forcing her to drag it behind her through the white wilderness. Ashmore was gone, hidden somewhere beyond the storm. The wind sharpened. Snow lashed her face. She had lost everything in a single night: home, safety, belonging. Hours passed. The sky darkened. The storm grew worse. Life narrowed to a single goal. One more step. Then another. Then another. The first real disaster came when her boot split open. Snow flooded inside. Freezing. Wet. Merciless. She stumbled, barely catching herself. For a moment she stared at the ruined leather while the storm howled around her. Then she set down the trunk and wrapped strips of cloth around the damaged sole with trembling fingers. The repair was pathetic, but it would have to be enough. When she stood again, dizziness swept through her. Hunger, real hunger. She hadn't eaten since yesterday. Not because food was unavailable, because heartbreak had left no room for appetite. Now her body demanded payment. Opening the trunk, she found a cloth bundle, bread, cheese, dried apples. The sight stopped her. Martha hadn't packed them. Seraphine knew that instantly. Her chest tightened. The bundle reminded her of Thomas, the way he used to prepare food before winter journeys. Perhaps one of the neighbors had left it. Or perhaps Evie, whoever it wasn't Martha. The thought lingered as she ate a small piece of bread and half an apple. Not enough to satisfy her hunger, but enough to keep moving, enough to continue. By late afternoon, the forest swallowed her. At first, the trees felt comforting, shielding her from the wind. Then came the sounds, a branch snapping, movement somewhere beyond the pines, the unmistakable sensation of being watched. Seraphine froze. The forest fell silent, too silent. Perhaps it had been a deer, a fox, a rabbit fleeing the storm, yet unease clung to her. An hour later she found the reason. Wolf tracks, several, fresh, very fresh. She crouched beside them, her stomach sinking. Exile was dangerous enough. Winter predators were another matter entirely. Suddenly every shadow seemed darker, every sound more threatening. As daylight faded, another realization struck. Night was coming. She needed shelter, immediately. A storm like this could kill her before morning. Panic threatened to surface. She forced it down. Think. Thomas Ash had taught her enough survival to know that fear never solved anything. She scanned the landscape carefully, searching, watching, hoping. Then she saw it. Smoke. Thin and gray against the storm-dark sky. For a heartbeat, she thought she imagined it. Then the wind shifted. Wood smoke, fire, warmth, human habitation. Relief nearly buckled her knees. Someone lived nearby. A cabin, a hunter's lodge, anything. It didn't matter. For the first time since the ceremony, she felt genuine hope. Gripping the trunk, she changed direction immediately. The smoke drifted deeper through the forest. Close enough. Every step quickened. The cold no longer mattered. The hunger no longer mattered. Only the promise of shelter. Only survival. Snow crunched beneath her boots. Branches scraped her sleeves as the forest thickened around her. Then, a howl shattered the silence. Far too close, Seraphine froze. The sound rolled through the trees, powerful and commanding. Not a lone wolf, something larger, something that ruled these mountains. A second howl answered. Then a third. The forest came alive. The pack was nearby, very nearby. Her pulse thundered. The smoke remained ahead. Hope. The wolves remained behind. Death. Seraphine tightened her grip on the trunk. Then she ran. And somewhere beyond the storm, a massive grey wolf lifted his head. Golden eyes narrowed. The wind had carried him a scent he had never encountered before. He turned toward the storm, toward the girl running through the snow. And for the first time in years, the Alpha felt fate stir. Chapter 5. The Light in the Storm. Seraphine ran. Another howl echoed through the forest. Closer. The sound shook snow from the branches overhead. Her lungs burned. Every breath felt like ice cutting her throat. Snow slipped beneath her damaged boot. Twice she stumbled. The third time she fell. The trunk flew from her hand. Pain exploded through her knees. For several seconds she simply lay there, half buried in snow, too tired to move, too tired to think. Maybe this was how winter won. The thought frightened her enough to force herself upright. She grabbed the trunk and kept moving. Then, a cabin emerged through the storm. Warm, golden light glowed behind frost-covered windows. Relief hit so suddenly it hurt. Someone lived here. Someone was home. She took another step and froze. A man stood beside the cabin beneath a lean-to, splitting firewood despite the storm. He turned and saw her. For a moment, neither moved. The distance between them couldn't have been more than 30 yards, yet the world seemed to narrow until only the stranger remained. He stared at her, like something she couldn't name. Then another howl cut through the storm. The man's head snapped toward the forest. His expression hardened instantly, predatory, protective. Power rolled from him like an invisible force, a powerful alpha. His gaze returned to her. Move! The command wasn't loud, it was absolute. Seraphine obeyed. The stranger crossed the snow toward her. Something unreadable flickered across his face. Concern. Then vanished. Can you walk? She opened her mouth. Nothing came out. He sighed, not impatiently, but as though he'd expected the answer. Without another word, he lifted the trunk with effortless ease and nodded toward the cabin. Inside, warmth struck her the moment the door opened. She nearly stumbled. Wood smoke, fresh bread, stew simmering somewhere nearby, home. The thought arrived unexpectedly, painfully. The cabin was simple but welcoming. A large stone fireplace dominated one wall. Shelves of books and carved figures filled another. Blankets draped chairs. Children's drawings decorated part of the room. Evidence of life. Evidence of happiness. Something ached inside her chest. She had almost forgotten homes could feel like this. The door shut behind them, sealing out the storm. Silence settled. Then a small voice drifted from down the hallway. Dad? The stranger closed his eyes briefly. A moment later, a little girl appeared. 7 years old, dark brown hair braided over one shoulder, bright blue eyes, a blanket wrapped around her like a cape. She stopped and stared, then pointed. You brought home a person. The statement was so serious, Seraphine nearly laughed. The stranger pinched the bridge of his nose. Leanna, what? You were supposed to be asleep. I was, she sounded offended. Then I woke up. Apparently that explained everything. Leanna turned back to Seraphine. You look frozen. I was working on it. The answer slipped out before Seraphine could stop herself. Leanna giggled. A bright, unguarded sound, the first laughter Seraphine had heard since leaving Ashmore, the first she'd shared. The realization startled her. The stranger noticed. For a brief moment, his expression softened. Sit near the fire. His voice sounded gentler now. Seraphine obeyed. The heat felt miraculous. Slowly, painfully, feeling returned to her hands. Leanna watched the process with fascination before climbing onto a nearby chair, still staring. You're prettier than the traveling merchants. The stranger nearly choked. Leanna. What? You can't say things like that. Why? Neither adult had an answer. The child looked triumphant. Seraphine laughed, actually laughed. The sound surprised everyone, especially herself. For a moment the weight of exile lifted, just enough. The stranger disappeared into the kitchen and returned carrying a steaming bowl. The smell alone nearly made her cry. Stew, real food, warm food. He handed it to her. Their fingers brushed. A strange sensation passed between them, quick, fleeting, gone before she could understand it. Yet he stilled too, just briefly, as though he had felt something. Neither mentioned it, neither understood it. Eat, he said quietly. Seraphine obeyed. The first spoonful nearly broke her, not because it was extraordinary, because it wasn't. Simple food, simple kindness, simple care. Things she had spent years living without. Liana eventually settled cross-legged near the fireplace, watching the flames and Seraphine in equal measure. Comfortable silence filled the room. Outside, winter raged. Inside, a little girl hummed softly while her father repaired a leather harness beside the fire. Peaceful, human, the scene hurt in the strangest way, because she had forgotten normal could exist, forgotten evenings could be quiet instead of lonely. Then Liana spoke. Will you stay tomorrow? The room froze. Seraphine lowered her spoon. The child wasn't trying to persuade her. She simply wanted to know. I don't know. It was the only honest answer. Liana considered this, then nodded okay. The child returned her attention to the fire. The simplicity of it felt oddly wise. The stranger glanced at Seraphine. Their eyes met. Something passed between them. Understanding. Perhaps gratitude. Perhaps loneliness recognizing loneliness. Neither looked away immediately. Neither understood why. Then Liana yawned. The moment broke. Her father stood. Bed. The little girl groaned dramatically. It's too early. It's not. It is. It's not. Seraphine smiled despite herself. The argument felt familiar. A ritual repeated countless times. Eventually, Liana allowed herself to be scooped into her father's arms, sleepy arms wrapped around his neck. Then she looked directly at Seraphine. You can stay tonight. The declaration sounded suspiciously like an order. Her father sighed. She's staying tonight. Liana nodded, satisfied, as though the decision had always belonged to her. Moments later, they disappeared down the hallway. Seraphine remained by the fire, listening. The murmur of a father's voice, a child's sleepy questions, soft laughter, life. For the first time since the moon ceremony, her heart didn't feel completely broken, only bruised, only healing. And beyond the storm and mountains, fate continued weaving its invisible threads, bringing two wounded souls slowly toward a future neither of them yet understood. The girl they sent away. Ashmore felt different. Nothing had changed. The same cottages, the same snow-covered roads, the same smoke curling from chimneys. Yet something was missing. A quiet absence lingered everywhere. Tristan Hale hated it. As he crossed the village square, people greeted him with praise. Future leader. The man who had made the right choice. At least that was what everyone kept saying. The words felt hollow. Near the well, he overheard women talking. She always helped during winter, especially with the elderly. Mrs. Halloway's roof still needs repairing. Tristan kept walking. The voices followed him anyway. Later, he passed a patch of winter roses buried beneath snow. Seraphine had planted them years ago. Most people thought they would die. They hadn't. His jaw tightened. By afternoon, he was at the training grounds, hoping routine would clear his head. It didn't. He missed three practice strikes. Three. A younger wolf noticed. Everything all right? Tristan's glare sent him retreating. Good. People needed to stop asking questions, because every reminder led to the same one. Had he made the right choice? Of course he had. The bond had been wrong. Everyone agreed. Yet somehow that certainty felt weaker now. And that bothered him more than anything. The Ash farmhouse felt different too. Martha Ash stood in the kitchen staring at half-peeled potatoes. The fire needed tending. The water bucket was nearly empty. Laundry remained unfolded. For years those things had simply happened. Now they didn't. The next morning she found a tear in one of her winter dresses and set it aside to be repaired. Several seconds later she remembered. No one would repair it. The realization settled heavily in the silence, so she did what she had done for days, ignored it, ignored the empty chair, the missing footsteps, the quiet girl who had always asked if anyone needed help. Ignoring things was becoming harder. 3 days after Seraphine's exile, Evie marched up the farmhouse path wrapped in a wool coat and fierce determination. She opened the door without waiting. "Hello?" then immediately searched the room. Hope filled her eyes. "Where is she?" silence answered. Slowly the smile disappeared. Evie's gaze moved to the empty chair, the unused space by the door. Understanding arrived. "No." The whisper broke something inside the room. The child ran upstairs. One bedroom, then another, searching, 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 until the footsteps stopped. Minutes later she returned, tears streaming down her cheeks. She really left. Nobody answered, because nobody could. Heartbroken, Evie turned and ran. The front door slammed behind her. The sound echoed through the farmhouse. For the first time, Martha felt something dangerously close to guilt. That night, snow fell softly across Ashmore. Tristan stood alone beneath the darkness long after the village had gone to sleep. Restlessness refused to leave him. Eventually, his gaze drifted north, toward the road Seraphine had taken, a road vanishing into snow and wilderness. A road no one should travel alone. A troubling thought surfaced. What if she didn't survive the winter? The question lingered long after he turned away. And for the first time since the moon ceremony, Tristan Hale found himself hoping that somewhere beyond the mountains, Seraphine was still alive. Chapter 6. Morning Light. Seraphine woke to warmth. For a moment she didn't understand why. Then memory returned. The cabin, the storm, Aldrich. Soft morning light spilled through the frost-covered window. The storm had finally passed, leaving behind a silence so peaceful it almost felt foreign. She sat quietly, listening to the crackling fireplace and the faint sounds of life beyond the walls. Normal life. The realization made her chest ache. Then the scent of fresh bread drifted through the air. Her stomach growled loudly. A laugh sounded from the doorway. Seraphine looked up to find Lyanna standing there with a wooden spoon, looking entirely too pleased. "Your stomach is noisy." Heat rushed to Seraphine's cheeks. "I heard it from the hallway," Lyanna added proudly. "Thank you for sharing that." "You're welcome." The child climbed onto the bed. "Father said you were tired." "I was." "You looked like a snowman." "A snowman?" "A very sad snowman." Despite herself, Seraphine laughed. Lyanna beamed. Apparently making adults laugh was one of her favorite hobbies. "Come eat," she declared, "before Father burns the bread." "He burns bread?" "No. But he worries about everything, so I worry about everything too." The casual honesty stopped Seraphine cold. Children noticed everything, even loneliness. Especially loneliness. The thought lingered as she followed Lyanna into the main room. Aldrich stood near the stove, broad shoulders catching the morning sunlight. For some reason, Seraphine slowed. That strange awareness from last night hadn't faded. If anything, it felt stronger. Aldrich glanced up. Their eyes met. Something tightened briefly inside her chest. "Morning." The single word carried unexpected warmth. "Morning." Silence followed. Unfamiliar. Like two people sensing something neither could explain. Thankfully, Lyanna had no interest in silence. "Father made bread." Aldrich sighed. "Lyanna." "What? You say that as if it's an achievement." "It is. Last month you nearly burned soup." Seraphine pressed her lips together. Aldrich noticed immediately. "Don't. That only made it worse." A laugh escaped her. For the first time, genuine amusement touched his face, and somehow that made it matter more. Breakfast passed quietly. Fresh bread, honey, warm tea, simple food, simple company. Lyanna talked enough for three people while Aldrich listened with endless patience. The routine felt practiced, comfortable, 1,000 ordinary mornings shared over the years. Someone had once shared them too. Lyanna's mother. After breakfast, Seraphine began gathering dishes automatically. Aldrich frowned. "You don't need to do that." "I know," she kept going. "You are a guest." I was raised by Martha Ash. That explained everything. Aldrich actually laughed, a short, unexpected sound. Even Lyanna looked shocked. Father laughed. I heard, "Are you sick?" The look Aldrich gave his daughter nearly sent Seraphine into another fit of laughter. The cabin seemed lighter afterward, as though everyone could breathe a little easier. And for one precious afternoon, the cabin felt like home. The realization frightened her, because homes could be lost. She knew that better than anyone. The laughter faded, the warmth remained, and beneath it, a quiet fear began to grow. Sooner or later, she would have to leave, and for the first time since crossing the border stones, she wasn't sure she wanted to. That evening, snow drifted softly beyond the windows. Lyanna slept beneath a blanket near the fire while Aldrich sat across from Seraphine. The darkness made the cabin feel smaller, more intimate. The silence between them stretched comfortably, until Aldrich spoke. "You haven't told us where you're from." Seraphine stared into the flames. "Ashmore," the word still hurt. "Nowhere important." Aldrich studied her quietly. He didn't push, just waited. The patience made honesty easier. "I was exiled." The confession landed softly, heavy nonetheless. Aldrich went still, not shocked, not judgmental, simply listening. "The elders blamed me for something that wasn't my fault." Silence lingered. Then, "What happened?" Seraphine swallowed. "My mate rejected me." The words hung between them. For a long moment, only the fire answered. Aldrich's gaze lowered. Something dark flickered across his features. Old pain. The kind that came from wounds of his own. And suddenly Seraphine realized this wasn't the first burden he carried, not even close. Neither spoke after that. Yet the silence felt different. A wall had cracked. Only slightly. But enough. Outside, winter still ruled the mountains. Inside, beside the firelight, two lonely hearts sat together in the quiet. And neither noticed fate smiling. The next morning arrived like any other. Then another. And another. It began to settle into a pattern. One day became two. Then three. The mountain passes remained buried beneath snow. Travel remained impossible. At least officially. Secretly. Seraphine had stopped wishing for clear roads. She helped around the cabin. Cooked, cleaned, mended clothes. Read stories to Lyanna. Small things, ordinary things. The kind of life she had never realized she wanted. And somehow, without discussion, she became part of their routines. The days slipped by quietly. Before she realized it, the cabin no longer felt like a place she was staying. It felt like a place she belonged. That night, Seraphine couldn't sleep. Moonlight spilled through the window. Restless thoughts churned inside her chest. Eventually, she slipped outside. The mountains gleamed beneath silver light. Beautiful. Lonely. She wrapped her arms around herself. "Couldn't sleep?" Aldrich's voice came from behind her. She turned. He stood on the porch, a blanket draped over one shoulder. "Neither could you." "No." For a moment, neither spoke. The silence felt different now. Filled with things neither seemed ready to say. Aldrich stepped closer. The cold air seemed warmer somehow. "You're smiling more." The observation surprised her. "So are you." A faint huff escaped him, almost a laugh. "Lyanna would disagree. Lyanna thinks you're one missed nap away from becoming a grumpy bear." His eyes widened slightly. "She said that?" "Several times." Aldrich groaned. Seraphine smiled. Then the smile faded, because she realized something. She couldn't remember the last day she'd thought about Tristan. The realization struck hard. For so long, her rejection had defined everything. Every thought, every wound, every fear. Now entire days passed without his shadow touching her. Aldrich seemed to notice the shift. "What is it?" Seraphine stared toward the mountains. "Nothing." He waited, patient as always. The patience made honesty impossible to avoid. "I think I'm forgetting how much it hurt." Aldrich's expression softened. "Not pity, understanding." "The wound is still there," he said quietly. "But wounds heal. Seraphine swallowed. No one had ever spoken those words to her before. Their eyes met, and something shifted. Small, powerful, a thread pulled tighter. Neither looked away. The air seemed to still around them. One heartbeat, two, three. Then the cabin door burst open.
Father!
Liana appeared wrapped in blankets, half asleep. Entirely dramatic. I woke up and nobody was there. The moment shattered instantly. Aldrich stepped back. Seraphine tried not to laugh. Liana squinted suspiciously between them, then pointed. You are having grown-up feelings again. Aldrich nearly choked. Seraphine stared. The child nodded confidently. I can tell. Neither adult knew how to respond. Liana seemed satisfied by their silence. He turned around. Come inside. The command sounded remarkably familiar. Aldrich rubbed his forehead. Seraphine laughed, and together they followed Liana back into the warmth. None of them noticed the pair of silver eyes watching from the distant tree line, watching the cabin. Watching the Alpha of Thornheart Ridge. Watching the exiled girl who should have remained forgotten. The figure disappeared into the darkness moments later, carrying news toward Ashmore and toward a future far more dangerous than any of them yet realized. Chapter 7. The Girl Nobody Saw. Winter still lingered over Ashmore. The snow remained, the cold remained, the routines remained. Yet the village felt different, not because of what had changed, but because of what was missing. The signs appeared in small ways at first. Widow Halloway's woodpile ran low. The healer struggled with dwindling winter herbs. The schoolteacher discovered damaged books he no longer knew how to repair. Each problem seemed insignificant alone. Together they formed a pattern. One nobody understood, at least not yet. Tristan Hale couldn't stop noticing it. Everywhere he went, reminders of Seraphine appeared. A flower bed she planted, a fence she repaired, a path she cleared after storms. The village seemed full of traces she had left behind. The realization irritated him, because every reminder carried the same uncomfortable truth. Seraphine had been everywhere, and he had never truly seen it. One afternoon he passed Widow Halloway's cottage. Several villagers stood beside the nearly empty woodpile. She usually had more than this. The widow nodded. She did. Who helped? The old woman looked surprised. Seraphine. Silence followed. Every winter, Tristan walked away before they noticed him listening, but the conversation followed him. After that, the stories surfaced everywhere. At the bakery, someone remembered Seraphine delivering bread to a quarantined family. At the blacksmith shop, another recalled her helping after a roof collapse during a storm. At the healer's cottage, an apprentice complained about dwindling winter root. The healer sighed. Of course we're running low. What do you mean, Seraphine gathered most of it? The apprentice blinked. Every year? The healer nodded. Suddenly the shortages made sense. The village had lost something, someone, and only now were people beginning to understand how much. 3 days later, Martha Ash found Thomas's old ledger buried inside a wooden chest. The first pages contained ordinary records. Then the entries changed. Widow Halloway needs more wood. Seraphine volunteered another page. Miller family struggling after poor harvest. Seraphine delivered food. Another. Young Ben's fever worsened. Seraphine stayed through the night. Page after page revealed years of quiet kindnesses. Names, families, sacrifices, all carefully recorded by the one man who had noticed. Martha turned the pages faster, her breathing uneven because the pattern was impossible to ignore. Thomas had seen something in Seraphine she never had. Then she reached the final note. The village sees an orphan. I see the finest heart in Ashmore. Martha stared until the words blurred. For the first time, she wondered whether Thomas would be ashamed of what they had done. The hardest moment came from Evie. The child sat near the village square, listening as adults talked about Seraphine again, praising her, missing her, remembering her. Finally, Evie stood, small fists clenched, eyes bright with tears. The adults fell silent. Did you tell her? Nobody answered. Before she left? The silence said enough. Evie's voice broke. You're supposed to tell people when they're good. The words landed softly. yet every adult standing there felt them, because she was right. They should have told Seraphine years ago, before the rejection, before the exile, before it became too late. Seraphine never heard the stories being told in her absence, never saw the regret, and perhaps that was for the best, because while Ashmore was finally beginning to understand what it had lost, for the first time in a very long while, Seraphine was beginning to heal. Chapter 8. The Mark Beneath Her Skin. The next few days passed quietly. The Watcher in the forest remained unseen. The danger moving toward Thornheart Ridge remained unknown. And because no one knew it was coming, life continued. Seraphine settled into the rhythm of the cabin. She rose early, lit the stove, prepared tea, and watched dawn spill gold across the snow-covered mountains. Small rituals she had once overlooked now felt precious. One morning, Lyanna wandered into the kitchen, wrapped in a blanket, her hair pointing in every direction. She stopped and pointed dramatically. "You're stealing my job," Seraphine smiled. "What job?" "Making breakfast." "You make breakfast?" The child nodded solemnly. "Emotionally." Aldrich walked in just in time to hear it. He closed his eyes, slowly. The familiar expression made Seraphine laugh. "See?" Lyanna announced. "See what?" Aldrich asked. "You're doing the disappointed face." Breakfast followed, then chores, then another peaceful afternoon. The roads remained buried beneath snow. No one complained, least of all Seraphine, because every day at Thornheart Ridge felt dangerously precious. That afternoon, Lyanna decided they were building a fortress, not a snow fort, a fortress. Apparently the distinction mattered. 2 hours later, the structure was complete. Lyanna climbed onto the highest section. It collapsed immediately. The child vanished into a pile of snow. A moment later, muffled laughter emerged. Seraphine doubled over laughing. Eventually, she pulled Lyanna free. The little girl stood covered head to toe in snow, looking deeply offended.
"Traitor, I didn't push you."
"You thought about it." That only made Seraphine laugh harder. When they returned to the cabin soaked and shivering, Aldrich took one look at them and silently handed over towels.
"You're both impossible."
"That's hurtful," Lyanna informed him. A raised eyebrow from Aldrich sent the child retreating behind Seraphine, a maneuver that clearly worked often. Still smiling, Seraphine headed to her room to change. She had just removed her wet sweater when the door burst open.
"Seraphine, father says..."
Lyanna froze. Seraphine froze.
"Oh."
Seraphine grabbed a blanket.
"Lyanna!" The child immediately covered her eyes. "Several seconds too late. I am sorry. You should knock."
"I forgot. You always forget." "That's true." The agreement ruined any attempt at scolding. Then Lyanna tilted her head, looking at Seraphine's shoulder. "What is that?" Seraphine glanced down. "The silver birthmark beneath her collarbone. A strange shape that sometimes resembled intertwined branches, sometimes a crown. Just a birthmark." Lyanna stepped closer.
"It's pretty. Father has scars, you have that. Not quite the same thing."
The child seemed unconvinced, then instantly forgot about it, as children often did. The conversation slipped from Seraphine's mind, until 3 days later. The old veteran arrived, Garrick. A retired Frostmere wolf who visited occasionally to bring supplies, complaints, and unsolicited opinions. By evening, he sat beside the fire telling stories while Seraphine mended a torn sleeve. Peace settled comfortably over the room. Then Lyanna looked up.
"Show him," Seraphine blinked.
"Show him what?"
"The mark."
Understanding dawned. Heat crept into her cheeks.
"Lyanna,
it's beautiful," Garrick chuckled. "Well, now I'm curious." Eventually, Seraphine surrendered. She pulled her collar aside just enough to reveal the silver mark. The old veteran smiled, then froze, completely. The amusement vanished from his face, color drained from his skin. The room fell silent. Aldrich straightened immediately.
"Garrick?"
The old wolf didn't answer. His gaze remained fixed on the mark. Shock, recognition, fear.
"Garrick?"
This time Aldrich's voice carried alpha authority. The veteran finally looked up.
"Where did you get that?"
Seraphine frowned.
"What?"
"The mark.
It's a birthmark. No, the answer came instantly. No, girl. The fire crackled. No one moved. The atmosphere had changed entirely. Aldrich's attention sharpened. What do you mean? Garrick swallowed. His eyes returned to the mark, to something he clearly wished he had never recognized. Then quietly he said, I saw that symbol once before. The room seemed to hold its breath. When? Aldrich asked. Garrick stared into the flames, as though looking 18 years into the past. The Nighthouse veil died. Silence. Absolute silence. Seraphine's heart stumbled. The name meant nothing. Yet somehow it felt important, dangerously important. Garrick looked at her again, not with fear, with awe. The royal family carried that mark. The words struck like thunder. Seraphine stared, unable to breathe, unable to think. Across the room, Aldrich had gone completely still. Even Lyanna sensed something was wrong and quietly moved closer to Seraphine. Garrick looked shaken, troubled, confused. I thought they were all dead. The fire crackled softly, the wind whispered beyond the walls. And for the first time since arriving at Thornheart Ridge, Seraphine wondered if she had never truly known who she was. Chapter 9. The Journal of the Dead Commander. Nobody slept well that night. Not Seraphine, not Aldrich, not even Garrick. Only Lyanna somehow slept through revelations capable of shaking kingdoms. By dawn, exhaustion sat behind Seraphine's eyes, but life continued. Breakfast still needed making. The snow still covered the mountains. Questions changed everything, and nothing. When she entered the kitchen, Aldrich was already there, staring out the window at the snow. Thoughtful, worried, the moment she appeared, his gaze found hers. Neither mentioned Housevale, neither mentioned the birthmark. The silence acknowledged both. Morning, his voice sounded rough. As though you didn't sleep either. A faint smile touched his mouth. Then Lyanna burst into the room. I dreamed about dragons. The declaration immediately became breakfast conversation. A welcome distraction. For a little while, everything felt almost normal. That afternoon, Garrick returned carrying something wrapped in oilcloth. The old wolf looked grim. Aldrich noticed immediately. What happened? Without answering, Garrick closed the door and set the bundle carefully on the table. After last night, I remembered something. Seraphine's stomach tightened. Slowly, Garrick unwrapped the cloth. A weathered leather journal appeared. Its faded royal seal was barely visible. Where did you get that? Seraphine asked. Garrick stared at the journal. It belonged to a dead man. Silence settled. Commander Benedict Ashcombe. The name struck Seraphine like a distant echo. Aldrich frowned. The captain of the Royal Guard? Garrick nodded. The same. Then memory surfaced. The grey-haired soldier from childhood stories. The man who had delivered her to Ashmore as an infant. Her pulse quickened. Garrick lowered himself into a chair. Benedict saved my life during a border skirmish. He wasn't just a soldier. He was the kind of man people trusted. Respect filled the old wolf's face. Then he pushed the journal toward her. He left this with me. Seraphine blinked. What? He said if the kingdom ever needed the truth, the answers were inside. The room suddenly felt colder. Seraphine reached for the journal, then hesitated. Not because she feared the book, because she feared what it might reveal. Aldrich moved closer, not touching, just there, steady. The silent support made breathing easier. Slowly she opened the cover. The first page read, Commander Benedict Ashcombe, Captain of the Royal Guard. Beneath it, if this journal survives, then I have failed. A shiver ran down her spine. Page after page detailed unrest within the kingdom. Political disputes, secret meetings, missing guards, unexplained deaths. Then one passage stopped her cold. The threat does not come from beyond the walls, it comes from within them. Aldrich leaned forward. Garrick cursed softly. Seraphine kept reading. The entries grew increasingly frantic. Trusted men changing loyalties. Strange disappearances. Whispers of conspiracy. Then another line appeared. There is a traitor inside House Vale. Nobody moved. Aldrich's jaw tightened. The journal continued. The king does not see it. The queen suspects. I fear we are running out of time. The fire cracked sharply, making everyone jump. Then came the final entry, as if written while danger approached. Tonight I take the child and flee. If we fail, House Vale ends. If we succeed, she must never know her name until it is safe. Protect her at all costs. Seraphine's hands trembled. One final word stood beneath the entry, larger than the rest. Princess. The journal slipped from her fingers. The world tilted. There was no longer any doubt. Someone had hidden her. Someone had hunted her. And 18 years ago, Commander Benedict Ashcombe had risked everything to save her life. The question was no longer who she was. The question was, who wanted her dead? Chapter 10. The Wolves Who Want Her Dead. The journal changed everything, and nothing. The sun still rose. Snow still covered the mountains. Lyanna still complained about vegetables. Yet an invisible tension settled over Thornheart Ridge. Seraphine felt it in Garrick's lingering stares and Aldrich's growing vigilance. He spoke less, watched more, became quietly protective in ways he would never admit. 3 days passed. The journal remained locked in Aldrich's study. Neither of them knew what to do with the truth. Princess. The word still felt impossible. Seraphine had spent her life as an unwanted orphan, a rejected mate. An exile. Not royalty, certainly not royalty. One afternoon she sat repairing Lyanna's winter coat, while the child sprawled across the floor, drawing every few minutes. Lyanna held up a page. This is you. The stick figure had enormous hair. Beautiful, Seraphine said. I know. And this is father. The second drawing somehow looked grumpier. Accurate. A deep voice sounded from the doorway. I can hear you. Lyanna didn't even look up. Then stop listening. Seraphine laughed. Aldrich entered carrying firewood, the corner of his mouth twitching, not quite a smile. Close enough. The sight warmed her more than it should have. Then Aldrich paused, listening. The change was subtle but immediate. His gaze shifted toward the forest beyond the window. Nothing moved, yet tension entered his posture, like a wolf scenting danger. After several moments, he relaxed. Probably nothing, the word lingered. That evening he checked the locks twice, walked the perimeter, then checked everything again. Even Lyanna noticed. Father, he looked up. You're doing the worried thing. What worried thing? The worried thing. The child returned to her book. Aldrich exchanged a glance with Seraphine. Neither spoke. Something was wrong. Both knew it. The next morning dawned bright and cold. For the first time in days, Seraphine ventured beyond the nearby pines with a basket to gather winter herbs. The forest felt peaceful. Birdsong drifted through the trees. For a little while she forgot journals, royal bloodlines, and conspiracies. She simply existed. A woman gathering herbs beneath winter sunlight. Then a branch snapped. Seraphine froze. The sound had come from behind her. Silence followed. She forced herself to keep walking. Another snap echoed. Closer. Much closer. Fear stirred. The forest suddenly felt too large. She turned. Nothing. Only snow and shadows. Then movement flashed between the pines. A wolf, gone instantly. Her pulse spiked. Someone was watching her. The thought had barely formed when a cloaked figure burst from the trees. Steel flashed. Seraphine stumbled backward. The blade missed her throat by inches. Shock stole her breath. The attacker struck again. Fast, precise, lethal. This wasn't robbery, wasn't chance. The stranger had come to kill her. The blade swung again. A roar exploded through the forest. Alpha, powerful, furious. The attacker froze. Just long enough. A massive grey wolf launched from the snow. Aldrich. The collision sent both wolves crashing through the undergrowth. Snow erupted around them. The assassin recovered first, shifted, ran. Aldrich pursued immediately. Moments later he returned, human again, snow covering his clothes, rage still burning in his eyes. Then he saw her, unhurt. Something in his expression broke. Relief, raw and immediate. He crossed the distance between them in seconds. "Are you hurt?" The question came harshly, almost angry, not at her, at the possibility. Seraphine shook her head, unable to speak. Aldrich checked anyway, her shoulders, arms, neck, searching for injuries. Only when he found none did he step back, his hands clenched. The effort it took him to stay calm was obvious. They knew where you were. The realization settled heavily between them. Someone had found her. Someone knew exactly who she was. And somewhere beyond the mountains. The people who destroyed House Vale had finally begun hunting again. The ride back to Thornheart Ridge was silent. Seraphine sat in front of Aldrich on horseback, the abandoned herb basket forgotten in the forest. The attack replayed endlessly in her mind. The blade, the mask, the certainty. That man had come to kill her. Aldrich's arm remained around her waist, steady, protective. Every time she noticed it, her pulse stumbled. The fact that she felt safer because he was there frightened her almost as much as the attack. By the time the cabin appeared through the snow, dusk had settled across the mountains. Warm light glowed from the windows. Home. The thought slipped into her mind uninvited. And hurt. Because Ashmore had once felt like home too. The horse had barely stopped before the door flew open. Lyanna came running. "You're late!" Then she saw their faces. The smile vanished. "What happened?" Aldrich helped Seraphine down. His hand lingered briefly at her waist. Neither acknowledged it. Lyanna's eyes narrowed. "You got scared. Not a question, a fact." "A little," Seraphine admitted. The child immediately hugged her. Something inside Seraphine softened. "I'm glad you're okay," Lyanna whispered. The words nearly broke her. For a moment she remembered Evie. The carved wooden wolf. The goodbye she never wanted. The ache lingered until Lyanna squeezed tighter, easing it just enough. Inside, warmth filled the cabin, but unease remained. That night, Aldrich checked every door and window repeatedly. Garrick watched from the table. The assassin knew where she was. Aldrich's jaw tightened. "I know." The journal reached someone, silence followed. Because everyone knew he was right, the journal, the birthmark, the attack, the pieces were connecting, and someone feared the truth. Across the room, Seraphine mended one of Lyanna's mittens while the child drew pictures beside her. Eventually, Lyanna held one up. "This is Father, a stick figure with enormous arms and a sword larger than the rest of him." Aldrich stared. "Why am I carrying a tree?" "It's a sword. That concerns me." Seraphine laughed. The tension eased. Just enough to breathe, just enough to remember they were still people. Not merely targets of an ancient conspiracy. Later, after Lyanna fell asleep, only firelight remained. Seraphine stared into the flames. "You chased him." Aldrich looked up. "The assassin," she swallowed. "You could have stayed with me." His answer came instantly. "As if I would let him escape." Something fierce flashed across his face. Protective, possessive, the intensity startled her. Aldrich seemed to realize it too and looked away. Silence stretched between them. Then he spoke. "He knew your face." A chill slid down her spine. "The assassin wasn't surprised," Aldrich said quietly. "He knew who he was hunting." The words settled heavily between them. Then Aldrich exhaled, decision hardening his features. "I need answers." She could hear the alpha in his voice now. A leader preparing for war. "What are you going to do?" Their eyes met. For a long moment, neither looked away. Then he said, "I'm going to find out who you are." The words should have frightened her. Instead, they felt like a promise. Aldrich left before sunrise the next morning. Garrick rode with him. No explanations, only a brief farewell. Lyanna waved furiously from the porch. Aldrich actually waved back. The rare sight made her beam. Then the riders disappeared into the snow. The day crawled by. Seraphine helped with chores, read stories, played games, and pretended not to worry. Pretended not to glance toward the road. Pretended not to miss him. By evening, she gave up pretending. Unfortunately, Lyanna noticed. The child noticed everything you keep looking outside. Seraphine nearly dropped the basket in her hands. I do not. You do. I don't. You do. Then Liana folded her arms and delivered her verdict. You miss him. Heat rushed to Seraphine's face. Lana, what? The innocence was entirely fake. The child grinned. Seraphine groaned. But deep inside, a realization took root. She no longer feared losing Thornheart Ridge because it was shelter. She feared losing it because it had become something far more dangerous. Something precious. Something worth fighting for. Meanwhile, far beyond Frostmire's borders, Aldric followed the trail of a dead kingdom. Every answer led to the same impossible conclusion. The birthmark matched, the journal matched, the timeline matched, and for the first time he began to suspect the truth. The orphan sleeping beneath his roof was not merely connected to House Vale, she was House Vale, the last surviving heir, and someone powerful was willing to kill to keep that secret buried. Chapter 11, The Kingdom of Liars. Aldric returned 4 days later. The moment Liana spotted him riding up the mountain trail, she launched herself off the porch. Father! She collided with him before the horse fully stopped. Aldric caught her automatically. The sight warmed Seraphine's chest. Then she saw his face. The warmth vanished. He looked exhausted. Like a man carrying answers he wished he'd never found. His gaze found hers. A single nod. Later. Her stomach tightened. The conversation waited until after dinner. After Liana finally surrendered to sleep. Firelight flickered across the cabin as Aldric placed a packet of documents on the table. Garrick stood nearby, unusually silent, troubled, deeply troubled. Aldric rested a hand atop the papers. I found witnesses. The room seemed to shrink. What kind? Seraphine asked. Garrick answered. The kind that survived. A chill swept through her. Aldric opened the packet. Inside were old testimonies, royal records and faded letters, fragments of a story buried for 18 years. The official version says House Vale died during a rogue attack. Seraphine nodded. Everyone knew that story. Aldric's expression hardened. It was a lie. Silence settled heavily. Truth had entered the room, dangerous and unavoidable. Garrick lowered himself into a chair. The attack happened. The deaths happened. His voice sounded distant. But the attackers were allowed inside. Seraphine froze. Aldric slid a testimony toward her. A surviving palace guard statement. The handwriting shook with fear. She read silently. The gates opened before midnight. The king never ordered it. Someone else did. Her pulse quickened. The northern tower guard was replaced. Patrol routes changed. The palace defenses were weakened intentionally. Every line destroyed another piece of history. It was planned. The realization escaped as a whisper. Nobody argued, because the evidence spoke for itself. Aldric pushed another document forward. This one contained only a name, one she had seen repeatedly throughout the records. Vale, her family. Slowly she looked up. Who? Aldric's jaw tightened. Lord Malrek Vale. The room fell silent. The name meant nothing to her. Everyone else's reaction said it should. Garrick exhaled heavily. He was the king's younger brother. The words landed like a blow. Brother, Aldric continued quietly. He survived the massacre. A terrible understanding began forming. He inherited authority afterward. No, the denial escaped automatically, not because she doubted it, because she wanted to. Family didn't do things like that. Then she remembered Ashmore, Martha, Tristan, perhaps family betrayed people all the time. History remembers him as a hero, Garrick said darkly. The man who saved the kingdom. A bitter laugh escaped Seraphine. He killed them. Neither man answered. They didn't need to. The evidence already had. Aldric unfolded the final document. An old letter. Commander Benedict Ashcombe's handwriting. The same hand that had written the journal. He read aloud. If the child survives, trust no version of the story told by Lord Malrek Vale. The room froze. Then Aldric continued. The kingdom will call him a savior. His voice lowered. He is the reason it burns. Silence followed, long, heavy. Years of lies unraveled beside the fire. Seraphine stared into the flames. Her life had changed too many times already. The exile, the journal, now this. She wasn't merely connected to House Vale. She wasn't merely a survivor. Someone had murdered her family, stolen her kingdom, then spent 18 years being celebrated for it. Seraphine. She looked up. Aldric's gaze held hers, steady, safe, a lifeline in the storm. For a moment, neither looked away. Then she asked the only question that mattered. What happens now? Aldric was silent for several seconds. The truth would bring more danger, more assassins, more lies, perhaps even war. Yet when he finally answered, there was no hesitation. We find the rest of the truth. And far beyond Frostmere, in a palace built on stolen blood, Lord Malrek Vale received confirmation at last. The survivor existed. The lost heir had lived. Seraphine Ash was alive. For the first time in 18 years, the man behind the massacre felt fear. Chapter 12. The Man She Was Never Supposed to Love. For 2 days after the revelation, Seraphine buried herself in ordinary tasks. She baked bread, mended Liana's cloak, and scrubbed dishes whenever her thoughts became too heavy. Then Liana appeared carrying 3 mismatched socks. Emergency. What happened? They stopped matching. Seraphine blinked. I think they're sick. A laugh escaped her before she could stop it. Across the room, Aldric looked up. Something softened in his expression, and her heart stumbled. Lately she noticed everything about him, far more than she should. That evening, Liana built a blanket fortress and forced them into a dragon story beside the fire. Halfway through, she fell asleep against Seraphine's shoulder. Aldric gently removed the book from her hands, neither wanted to wake her. Silence settled between them. Warm, comfortable, dangerously intimate. I used to think I knew exactly who I was, Seraphine admitted. And now? A faint smile touched her lips. Now I think I know less than ever. I don't know where I belong. Aldric stared into the flames. I know that feeling. For the first time she saw the grief beneath his calm. My wife died 6 years ago. Liana was barely 1. Pain filled the room. I spent years thinking I'd failed them, that if I'd made different choices. The unfinished sentence said enough. You loved her, very much, no hesitation, only truth. She must have been extraordinary. A small smile appeared. She was. Something inside Seraphine eased, because it revealed exactly what kind of man he was, a man capable of loving completely even after loss, and that frightened her, because she was beginning to care far too much. The fire burned lower, conversation faded into a comfortable quiet. Then Aldric looked at her, really looked at her. The room seemed smaller, warmer. Neither looked away. His gaze flickered briefly to her lips before returning to her eyes. The tiny movement stole her breath. The distance between them suddenly felt significant. Then Aldric rose and carefully lifted the sleeping Liana into his arms. The spell broke, but not completely. At the doorway he paused. Firelight flickered across his face. I'm glad you came here. The words hit harder than they should have, because no one had ever said them before. No one. Emotion tightened her throat. So am I. Their eyes held for one last heartbeat. Then he disappeared down the hallway. Seraphine remained beside the dying fire, her heart refusing to slow, because somewhere along the way, without permission, without intention, without warning, she had begun falling in love with the man she was never supposed to love. And for the first time in years, it didn't feel frightening. It felt like hope. Chapter 13. The Weight of the Crown. The first sign of trouble arrived with visitors. 3 riders appeared shortly after dawn, silver wolves emblazoned on black banners. Liana spotted them first. Visitors! Aldric glanced through the window. His expression changed instantly. The relaxed man from the previous evening vanished. The alpha remained. Inside, Liana groaned. Now. The child obeyed immediately, Seraphine noticed. Aldrich was rarely forceful with her, which meant these visitors mattered. Minutes later, Garrick entered carrying a loaded bow. What happened? Seraphine asked. Nothing. Then he added, yet a knock followed. Aldrich opened the door himself. The lead rider stepped forward, a broad-shouldered alpha with a scar crossing one side of his face. Kaelin, no smiles, only the respect of powerful men. Alpha Kaelin Frostfang entered, his gaze briefly settling on Seraphine. You weren't exaggerating. Aldrich's expression didn't change. No. The visitors remained through the morning. Maps covered the table. Trade became patrols. Patrols became politics. What fascinated Seraphine wasn't the discussion. It was Aldrich. This wasn't the man who repaired fences or tolerated Liana's dragon theories. This was a ruler, decisive, certain. When he spoke, others listened. When he decided, arguments ended. For the first time, she fully understood why Alphas respected him and why they feared him. At one point, Kaelin leaned back. You've ignored every gathering for years. I've been busy. A few Alphas exchanged glances. Then Kaelin said quietly, 6 years. The cabin grew still. The exact number, the year since Aldrich's mate died, since he abandoned courts, politics, and celebrations, since he chose a lonely mountain over the rest of the kingdom. Kaelin's voice softened. She wouldn't have wanted this. A dangerous silence followed. Garrick looked away. The other Alphas studied their maps. Aldrich's eyes turned cold, not angry, worse, deadly. Careful, one word, enough. The subject never returned, because everyone present knew the truth. Part of Aldrich Thornheart had gone into the grave beside his mate. Nobody touched that wound, not even another Alpha. The riders departed before sunset. Only after they vanished into the mountains did the cabin relax. Liana immediately reclaimed her chair. The scary wolves are gone. Garrick barked a laugh. Aldrich looked offended. Scary wolves? Yes. Then she pointed at him. And you're the scariest one. Garrick nearly choked. Seraphine laughed. Aldrich rubbed his forehead like a man questioning every decision that had led him to parenthood. Hundreds of miles away, Ashmore's Great Hall was crowded with visiting Alphas. The discussions had begun normally. Trade, borders, spring agreements. Then someone mentioned Seraphine. The room changed instantly. Your village exiled a girl this winter. The statement came from Alpha Marcus Blackmore, one of the most respected leaders in the Northern Territories. Several elders exchanged glances. It was necessary, one answered. Marcus looked unimpressed. Was it? The hall grew quieter. The elder straightened. The future Beta rejected her. Marcus laughed, actually laughed. The sound echoed through the chamber. Embarrassment immediately followed, because nobody else was laughing. The Alpha set down his cup. I met Widow Holloway. Silence. I met your healer. More silence. I met two farmers. His gaze swept the room. And every one of them spoke highly of the girl you threw away. Nobody answered. Marcus wasn't finished. I asked what crime she committed. The elder shifted, uncomfortable. I never received an answer. The hall felt smaller now. Hotter. Tristan remained motionless. Every word landed harder than the last. Marcus leaned back, then delivered the killing blow. You exiled one of your own because your future Alpha rejected her. The question hung in the air. Merciless. No one answered, because there was no answer. The silence itself became judgment. Another Alpha finally spoke, quietly, almost thoughtfully. Strange. The word drew every eye. The older Alpha shrugged. Most packs reward wolves who spend their lives helping others. Silence, again. Tristan felt every pair of eyes in the room. Not accusing, worse, questioning. For the first time since the moon ceremony, he understood something terrible. Ashmore's decision was no longer a private mistake. The rest of the Northern Territories knew, and they were beginning to talk. That night he walked alone beneath the stars. Snow crunched beneath his boots. "You look miserable." Tristan glanced sideways. Evie sat atop a fence, watching him, judging him. "I am not miserable." The child considered that. "You look miserable." Tristan sighed. The argument was already lost. After a moment, Evie asked quietly, "Do you think she's happy?" The question struck harder than expected. Seraphine rode the mountains, the unknown. "I don't know." Evie looked toward the sky. "I hope she is." The words lingered. Simple, honest, painful. Because for the first time, Tristan realized he hoped the same thing. Far beyond Ashmore, a light still burned in a lonely mountain cabin. Outside, Aldrich stood watching the tree line, silent, still, waiting. Every instinct screamed the same warning. Something was coming, and whatever it was, it wanted Seraphine. By morning, instinct had become certainty. A rider arrived before sunrise. Border Patrol found tracks. Aldrich's expression hardened. "What kind?" "Not Frostmere." Garrick stepped onto the porch. "How many?" "At least six." Silence followed. Six strangers crossing mountain territory in winter wasn't an accident. It was purpose, and purpose brought trouble. The Southern Pass. The same direction the assassin had fled. Aldrich no longer believed in coincidences. "Double the patrols," he ordered. "No one travels alone." The rider left immediately. Garrick muttered a curse. "They found us faster than I expected." Aldrich said nothing. Because he had expected this all along. Inside, Seraphine pretended not to listen. She failed. The tension entered the cabin with Aldrich. Liana noticed immediately. "What's wrong?" Aldrich crouched beside her. "Nothing you need to worry about." The child narrowed her eyes. "That's grown-up code." Even Garrick looked amused. "Code for what?" Aldrich asked. "It means something is wrong." Nobody answered. Liana sighed dramatically. Much later, after Liana slept and Garrick retired, only the fire remained. Seraphine sat near the hearth. Aldrich occupied the chair opposite. The space between them felt smaller than usual. "You should be asleep." "So should you." A real smile appeared, brief but warm. Outside, wind battered the cabin. Inside, silence settled comfortably around them. Then Aldrich's expression grew serious. "The patrols found tracks." Her stomach dropped. So that was the reason for the tension. "Do you think they're looking for me?" A long pause. Then yes, fear twisted inside her. Aldrich saw it immediately. "You are not facing this alone." The words landed like a promise. Their eyes met. Neither looked away. The fire crackled. The room seemed to shrink. One heartbeat. Two. Three. Something invisible pulled between them. Strong. Dangerously easy. Aldrich leaned forward slightly. Seraphine forgot how to breathe. Then a thunderous snore exploded from the corner. Both jumped. Garrick, sleeping, very loudly. The moment shattered. A laugh escaped Seraphine. Aldrich closed his eyes briefly in defeat. For a few precious seconds, fear disappeared. Far beyond Frostmere, six wolves gathered around a dying campfire. Their leader studied a worn sketch of a young woman. Dark hair, gentle eyes, Seraphine. "We're close," one wolf said. The leader nodded and fed the sketch into the flames. The paper curled and blackened. "Good." His voice was quiet, cold. "Because this time she doesn't escape. High above the mountains, hidden by darkness and storm clouds, fate continued moving toward Thornheart Ridge." Chapter 14. The Woman Frostmere Chose. Winter surrendered slowly. Snow receded from Thornheart Ridge. For a little while, life felt almost normal. The illusion shattered 3 days later. A messenger arrived shortly after dawn. Aldrich was already outside before the rider reached the gate. "Alpha, the wolf delivered reports on reopening roads, settlements, and supply routes." Listening from the porch, Seraphine realized Frostmere was far larger than she'd imagined. Hunters, farmers' families, entire communities depended on Aldrich. The realization changed something. The quiet man in the cabin suddenly made more sense. The weight he carried was enormous, and he carried it alone. As spring approached, more visitors came. Hunters brought patrol reports. soldiers delivered updates. A widow sought help settling a dispute. An elderly woman arrived with preserves for Liana. The world was waking up. One visitor stood out. An older woman marched from a wagon carrying enough baskets to feed an army. Grey hair, sharp eyes, absolutely fearless. She pointed directly at Aldric. "You're thinner!" For the first time since Seraphine had met him, Aldric looked alarmed. "You've been skipping meals again." Garrick looked delighted. Liana looked thrilled. The Alpha King looked trapped. Then the woman noticed Seraphine. Her expression softened immediately. "Well, you're the girl." "The girl. The one making my Alpha remember he's human." Aldric closed his eyes, slowly. The look of a man suffering. The woman extended her hand. "Ilara Stonewell." Liana launched herself into Ilara's arms moments later. The older woman caught her effortlessly. The familiarity revealed years of love and family. For the first time, Seraphine glimpsed another piece of Aldric's life. Days passed. The mountain continued waking from winter. So did Frostmere. A wounded hunter arrived with a torn shoulder. Seraphine helped clean and bandage the injury. A shepherd's son developed a fever. She stayed half the night until it broke. An elderly couple became stranded after a wagon axle snapped. She helped repair it. None of it felt extraordinary, just kindness, the sort of thing Thomas Ashe had taught her. One afternoon, Aldric returned from inspecting the Western Trail and found the yard crowded with visitors, horses, and wagons. He frowned. Garrick noticed. "Relax, that's not reassuring." The old soldier snorted. Aldric's gaze found Seraphine beside the well, speaking with an elderly woman. The woman squeezed her hand and handed over a basket. Only then did Aldric notice the others. Baskets on the porch, baskets beside the kitchen door, baskets near the woodpile. "What is this?" Garrick looked suspiciously amused. "A problem." Aldric immediately became alert. "What kind?" "The grateful kind." Then Ilara appeared, carrying another basket. A hunter's family brought that one. The shepherd's wife brought another. The widow from South Ridge sent preserves. Aldric stared. The pieces connected. The gifts weren't for him. They weren't for Frostmere. They were for Seraphine, because she had helped people. And people remembered. The realization settled heavily inside him. Years ago, before grief hardened him, his mate had been exactly the same. Always helping, always giving, never asking for anything in return. A smile, a laugh, blood, a grave, the mountain, the silence afterward. His expression turned to stone. Ilara saw it immediately. Without a word, she rested a hand against his arm before walking away. A small kindness, nothing more. Aldric looked toward Seraphine. Sunlight caught her hair as she laughed at something Liana said, completely unaware of how people were beginning to look at her, as though she belonged. The realization should have comforted him. Instead, it frightened him. Because important things could be taken away, he knew that better than anyone. That night, after everyone slept, Aldric stood alone on the porch beneath the moon. The mountains stretched endlessly beyond the valley. Footsteps approached. Seraphine, of course. She joined him at the railing, wrapped in a shawl. "Couldn't sleep?" "No." The answer came automatically. For a while they stood in companionable silence. Then Seraphine smiled toward the valley. "I met more people this week than I have in months. Frostmere is waking up. They seem kind." A faint huff escaped him. "They're stubborn." "That too." The corner of his mouth twitched, then faded. Seraphine studied him. "You protect a lot of people." The words lingered. Aldric remained silent because she didn't understand. Protection wasn't noble. It was failure measured in graves, arriving too late, again, and again, and again. His jaw tightened, the old wound reopening. Seraphine seemed to sense it. She didn't push, didn't demand answers. She simply stayed, quietly, beside him. And somehow that made everything worse, because she was becoming important, far too important. Aldric Thornhart had buried one woman he loved. He had spent 6 years making certain it never happened again. Now, for the first time since that grave was filled, he was beginning to lose that battle. And far beyond the mountains, Lord Malrek Vale received another report. the surviving heir remained hidden, alive, protected, and becoming increasingly difficult to reach. The hunt was about to become a war. Chapter 15. The Crown of Ashes. The first warning came as smoke, thin, dark, wrong. Aldric spotted it from the western ridge shortly after sunrise. His horse was still moving when he turned. "Ride!" The command cracked through the air. The scouts obeyed instantly. The smoke rose from one of Frostmere's smallest western settlements, too insignificant to attack, which meant someone wanted attention or fear. Neither possibility pleased him. The ride back to Thornheart Ridge was merciless. Mud and melting snow exploded beneath pounding hooves while unease sharpened into certainty. Something was wrong. Very wrong. Seraphine was helping Leanna knead bread when the front door burst open. Aldric entered covered in mud, his expression carved from stone. The room changed immediately. Even Leanna fell silent. "What happened?" Seraphine asked. His gaze found hers. "We leave within the hour." Leave, inside the manor, an order. The Alpha King had returned, and somehow that frightened her more than anger ever could. The day unraveled quickly. Messengers arrived one after another. Burned farms, destroyed supply wagons, dead livestock, missing patrols, not random attacks, coordinated ones. Disaster arrived after midnight. The first explosion shook the manor. Glass shattered. Walls trembled. Seraphine bolted upright as a second blast followed. The bedroom door flew open. Aldric stood there. "Move," one word, pure command. She obeyed instantly. Moments later, Leanna appeared, terrified and half asleep. The child ran straight to her father. Aldric lifted her without slowing. Outside, chaos consumed Thornheart Ridge. Fire lit the darkness. Smoke rolled across the mountain. Steel clashed. Warriors shouted. The attack had begun. The next moments blurred into smoke, fear, and chaos. Leanna trembled against Seraphine's shoulder as warriors charged toward the flames. Then a wolf's roar split the night. Aldric burst through the burning wreckage carrying Alara while dragging a wounded warrior beside him. When attackers reached for Seraphine, they found the Alpha King standing in their path. Not the quiet man who repaired fences, not the father who listened to Leanna's stories, the protector, the destroyer, the monster kingdoms feared. The battle raged until dawn. When the final attacker fell, Frostmere still stood, but at a cost. Three warriors were dead, many more were wounded. Homes smoldered, families grieved. Elara survived, barely. Seraphine stood among the ruins, staring at the damage. Only one thought remained: this happened because of me. The guilt settled deep inside her. Poisonous, unrelenting. Aldric found her standing alone, blood stained his coat. A cut crossed his cheek. His knuckles were raw. Yet he seemed unaware of any of it. "This is my fault." His expression hardened instantly. "No, these people were attacked because of me." A dangerous silence followed. Then Aldric stepped closer. "The people who did this made that choice." His voice was cold, deadly. "They came here to take someone from me." Seraphine looked up. Aldric's eyes locked onto hers. "I buried the woman I loved 6 years ago. I carried her to her grave with my own hands." Pain flickered across his face before disappearing. "I will not do it again." The promise wasn't loud. It didn't need to be. Everyone nearby heard it, and everyone believed it. Behind them, Frostmere's warriors straightened. Their alpha still stood, and so did they. Aldric turned toward the horizon. One truth had become undeniable. This attack had never been random. Someone knew Seraphine was alive. Someone wanted her dead. And someone was willing to burn an entire territory to make it happen. Far away in the capital, a bloodied messenger knelt before Lord Malrek Vale. The mission failed. Silence. Deadly silence. Malrek rose slowly. The Alpha intervened. The messenger's voice shook. "Most of the assassins are dead." Without warning, Malrek struck him across the face. "You found the last heir of House Vale," he said softly. "And somehow she is still breathing." The messenger swallowed. She wasn't alone. A pause. "She's under the protection of Aldric Thornheart." For several seconds, Malrek simply stared. Aldric. The name emerged quietly. The broken Alpha King had abandoned kingdom affairs years ago, yet somehow he had chosen a side, her side. For the first time that night, uncertainty crossed Malrek's face. Many men could be bought, threatened, killed. Aldric Thornhart was none of those things. "Our men never reached her," the messenger whispered. "The Alpha stopped them." A muscle jumped in Malrek's jaw. Slowly he returned to his desk, already rebuilding plans. The attack had failed for one reason. Aldric Thornhart stood between them and their target. That changed everything. Malrek turned toward the northern mountains, toward the Alpha who had unknowingly stepped into a war 18 years in the making. At last he understood the truth. The problem was no longer the girl. The problem was the man protecting her. And until he found another way, the game would have to change. Chapter 16. The Kingdom That Chose Her. The funerals lasted 3 days. Frostmere buried its dead beneath grey skies and bitter wind. Grief settled over the mountains like another layer of snow. Seraphine attended every funeral and vigil. She comforted widows, helped grieving families, and cared for children left frightened by the attack. None of it felt like enough. Every fresh grave whispered the same cruel thought. "This happened because of me." The poison deepened with each passing day. Elara survived, though barely. Aldric, meanwhile, became harder to find. He spent his days with scouts, commanders, and messengers. Patrols doubled, then tripled. The mountain remained under constant guard. He had simply begun preparing for war, which was far more frightening. One evening, Seraphine found him standing near the western cliff, staring toward the sunset, or pretending to. She joined him quietly. The wind tugged at her hair. Finally, she said, "I'm leaving." The words vanished into the open sky. Aldric didn't react, didn't move, didn't blink, which somehow made it worse. She swallowed. "I should have left the moment I realized what was happening." Silence. "The attacks are because of me. Still nothing. If I go, they stop." Aldric stepped closer. "People like Malrek never stop." The name sounded ancient on his tongue. "They take another step. They destroy another. They come back." For one brief second, she saw the ghost beneath the words. His mate. The woman he failed to save. Then the mask returned. "If you leave," he said quietly, "you'll simply die somewhere else." The blunt truth stole her breath. Aldric looked away. Conversation over. Decision made. Unfortunately for him, Seraphine wasn't finished. The idea grew stronger with every funeral, every grave, every grieving family, until she finally made her choice. She would leave. Not because she wanted to, because she loved them. That realization hurt most of all. After midnight, she packed quietly. A trunk, a blanket, a few belongings. The same way she had packed in Ashmore. Only this time she was choosing exile. Tears blurred her vision. She ignored them. Some choices hurt. That didn't make them wrong. She opened the front door and froze. People were waiting, dozens of them. Lanterns glowed across the darkness like a field of stars. For a moment she couldn't understand what she was seeing. Then Elara stepped forward, leaning heavily on a cane, still injured, still stubborn. "Where exactly do you think you're going?" Seraphine's heart stopped. Behind her stood Garrick, arms crossed and looking annoyed. Then she saw the others, the hunter she had helped, the shepherd's family, the widow whose wagon she repaired, people she knew, people she barely knew, people who somehow knew her. The words failed. Elara pointed her cane. "You don't get to leave what? You heard me." The older woman looked entirely prepared to fight her if necessary. "This is my fault." Immediately voices rose from the crowd. "No, not true. Never." The answers came from every direction. The shepherd stepped forward. "You stayed with my son when he was sick." Another voice followed. "You helped my mother. You repaired our wagon. You carried supplies during the storm." One memory became another, then another. A life of quiet kindness she never realized anyone noticed. Tears burned her eyes. Because suddenly she remembered Ashmore. All the years nobody seemed to see, the contrast hurt and healed at the same time. Then Lyanna pushed through the crowd. The child looked furious, absolutely furious. She stopped in front of Seraphine and planted both hands on her hips. You're being stupid. The crowd became fascinated by the night sky. Several people coughed suspiciously. Liana! No! She pointed dramatically, a habit clearly inherited from Alara. You're my family. Silence fell, complete and devastating. Liana's eyes filled with tears. I already lost one mother. The words shattered something inside everyone present. The child swallowed hard, then whispered, I'm not losing another. Seraphine broke. The tears came instantly, because no one had ever chosen her like this. Not Ashmore, not her pack, not anyone. Until now, a movement at the back of the crowd caught her attention. Aldrich, of course, he had been there all along, watching, waiting, silent. Their eyes met. Then he stepped forward. The crowd parted automatically, not from fear, from trust, because they knew exactly where their alpha intended to stand, beside her. He stopped within arm's reach, close enough to matter. The wind howled across the mountain. Nobody spoke. Aldrich looked at the packed trunk, then at her. When he finally spoke, his voice carried through the entire crowd, calm, certain, final, you stay. A decision, the same certainty that ended arguments between alphas, the same certainty that ruled Frostmere. Except this time it was directed at her, and for the first time since Seraphine Ash had been exiled from her home, someone wasn't asking her to leave, they were asking her to stay. And somehow that was far more terrifying, because she wanted to, more than anything. Chapter 17. The Alpha Who Chose Her. For the first time in weeks, Thornheart Ridge was quiet. Not peaceful, not yet, but quieter. The kind of silence that follows grief, fear, and survival. Seraphine couldn't sleep. She stood alone, on the porch beneath silver moonlight, breathing cold mountain air, when familiar footsteps sounded behind her. Aldrich, always Aldrich. You should be asleep. His voice was quiet, familiar. A faint smile touched her lips. You first. A small huff escaped him, almost a laugh. He joined her at the railing, both staring toward the dark mountains. The silence between them felt natural now. Comfortable, dangerously comfortable. Finally, Aldrich spoke. You were really going to leave, not to question. Yes. The answer hurt more than she expected. I thought it was the right thing. The attacks happened because of me. When he said nothing, frustration slipped through. Why won't you argue with me? That earned a response. Aldrich turned toward her. Because you're wrong. The certainty in his voice stole the argument before it began. He stepped closer. You think this is your fault? His eyes never left hers. It isn't. No one had ever defended her with such absolute conviction, not even Thomas. The wind lifted a strand of hair across her face. Without thinking, he brushed it away. The touch froze them both, too intimate, too honest. Yet neither stepped back. Then Aldrich lowered his hand, too late. The moment remained between them. Alive, dangerous, 6 years. The words came, unexpectedly. Seraphine frowned. What? His gaze drifted toward the darkness. My mate died 6 years ago. Not information, trust. I wasn't there. His voice roughened. I should have been. Seraphine stayed silent. The attack wasn't meant for her. It was meant for me. Pain settled between them. I arrived too late. A pause. Then, I found her anyway. The words nearly shattered her. Because she heard everything hidden beneath them. The grief, the guilt, the years of self-blame. For the first time she truly understood him, why he watched every horizon, why protection mattered so much, why losing her terrified him, because he had already lost someone once and it had almost destroyed him. For a moment neither spoke. Then Aldrich looked toward the mountains. The night you arrived. Seraphine frowned. What about it? A shadow crossed his face. I was in the forest. The storm? He nodded. In wolf form. Memory flashed through her. Snow. Darkness. The distant howls she had feared so desperately. Aldrich noticed her expression. The wolves you heard weren't hunting you. Realization struck. The howls. My patrol. His voice remained quiet. I caught your scent before I ever saw you. Seraphine stared. Aldrich looked briefly away. I didn't understand it then. His gaze returned to hers. But for the first time in 6 years since I lost her, my wolf turned toward something instead of away from it. The confession settled softly between them, and suddenly Seraphine understood. The storm had not only changed her life, it had changed his too. Without thinking, she stepped closer. Aldrich, his eyes closed briefly, as if hearing his name hurt. Or healed, perhaps both. When he looked at her again, something had changed. The walls between them were thinning, failing. You make it difficult. She blinked. What? His gaze locked onto hers. You make it difficult to remember why I stopped caring. The words stole her breath, because they were true. Terribly true. Aldrich stepped closer. Close enough to see the scar through his eyebrow. Close enough to count the silver flecks in his eyes. His hand lifted slowly, giving her every chance to step away. She didn't. His rough palms settled against her cheek with impossible gentleness, as though she were something precious, something fragile. The contradiction nearly undid her, a man feared by kingdoms touching her like that. Aldrich studied her for several long seconds, then lowered his forehead against hers. The contact was feather-light, almost unbearably tender. Seraphine closed her eyes. Emotion flooded her chest. Warm, painful, overwhelming. When he finally spoke, his voice was barely a whisper. You should have been cherished. The words shattered her, because no one had ever said them before. Then his lips touched her forehead. A single kiss. Soft. Certain. A choice. When he finally stepped back, neither spoke. There was nothing left to say. The truth existed now, between them. Alive. Undeniable. Chapter 18. The throne was never the reward. The summons arrived at dawn. Not from Frostmere, from the capital. The royal seal hung broken across the parchment, urgent, unmistakable. Aldrich read the message twice, his expression darkening. By the time Seraphine entered, Garrick already looked prepared for war. A public assembly had been called, every major alpha, every elder, every surviving royal witness. The kingdom wanted answers. After 18 years, the truth was forcing its way into the light. The royal council had invoked an emergency assembly, the first in nearly 20 years. Even Lord Malrek Vale, the regent who had governed Aurelian since the fall of House Vale, could not prevent it. After the royal family was believed lost, the kingdom had allowed Malrek to rule as regent, a caretaker entrusted to govern until a rightful heir emerged. No one had expected that day to come. Malrek's attacks on Frostmere had drawn too much attention. Questions spread, witnesses emerged, old secrets resurfaced. The journey south lasted 6 tense days. On the 7th morning, the capital rose beneath golden banners. The city her parents had once called home, the city stolen from her before she could remember it, thousands waited. The lost princess, the survivor of House Vale, the woman from Frostmere. Everyone knew pieces of the story. No one knew the whole truth. But while the kingdom waited for long-buried truths to surface, another judgment was about to be delivered. One far more personal. Tristan stood against the stone wall as Aldrich Thornhart stopped before him. I heard what you said to her. Tristan's stomach tightened. I cannot marry someone not of my status. Do you know what status is? Aldrich asked. Tristan remained silent. Status is the easiest thing in the world to inherit. Character isn't. The words struck hard. Aldrich glanced toward Seraphine. The rarest woman a man will ever meet isn't the most beautiful, richest, or highest born. His voice sharpened. It's the woman who remains kind after life gives her every reason not to be. Tristan lowered his eyes too late. A brief silence followed. You saw lack of status. Pity flickered in Aldrich's gaze. I saw the kind of woman kingdoms are built around. The words cut deeper than any blade. Then came the final wound. The tragedy isn't that Seraphine lost you, Tristan. his eyes settled on the woman standing at the center of the kingdom. The tragedy is that one day you'll understand what you threw away. Yet, the great hall overflowed with nobles, alphas, elders, and citizens. At the far end sat Lord Malrek Vale. For the first time, Seraphine looked upon the man who had stolen her family, her kingdom, and 18 years of her life. His smile made her skin crawl. Then Aldric stepped forward. The smile vanished. Even Malrek seemed uneasy. Good. The testimonies began. Old soldiers, former servants, survivors, piece by piece, the truth emerged. House Vale had not fallen to invaders. The gates had been opened from within. The king betrayed, the queen betrayed, the royal guard betrayed, by Lord Malrek Vale. Shock rippled through the hall. Then Garrick carried forward Commander Benedict Ashcombe's journal. His hands trembled as the final entries were read aloud. The burning palace, the dying king, the queen refusing to abandon her child, the desperate escape, and Benedict's final promise, "Tonight I take the child and flee. If this journal survives when I do not, protect her. At all costs," silence followed, the kind that changes history. Then Martha Ashe rose. "I found this among Thomas Ashe's belongings." She opened a small wooden box. Inside rested a silver pendant shaped like a crescent moon wrapped in flowering vines. Seraphine's breath caught. Something deep inside recognized it. Martha's voice broke. "Thomas never allowed anyone to touch it. He said it belonged to the child." Garrick stood abruptly. His face had gone pale. "I remember that." Every eye turned toward him. "Queen Celeste wore it." Gasps swept through the chamber. Several older nobles immediately confirmed it. For generations, the pendant had belonged to the Queens of House Vale, the final gift of a mother to her daughter, the final proof. Across the hall, Malrek lost all color. He knew. The game was over. For the first time, the mask cracked. The charming ruler vanished. The monster remained. He denied, accused, threatened, lied. But the kingdom no longer listened. Then another voice rose. Strong. Familiar. "He's telling the truth." Tristan Hale stepped forward. Mira stood beside him. Ashmore's elders behind them. Years of pain stood between him and Seraphine. The rejection, the exile, the humiliation. Tristan stopped before her, bowed, completely, publicly. "I was wrong," the hall fell silent. "I judged her without knowing her. I failed her. I humiliated her publicly." Shame roughened his voice. "Then came the truth that mattered. Seraphine Ashe deserved better than what we gave her." Martha wept openly. The elders lowered their heads. For the first time since the moon ceremony, the shame belonged to those who caused the wound, not the woman who survived it. Something loosened inside Seraphine, the first step toward healing. Before sunset, judgment was delivered. Malrek was stripped of title, authority, and legacy. Every crime recorded, every lie exposed. Then he made one final mistake. He ran. The hall erupted. Guards moved, warriors moved, alphas moved. Too slowly, because Aldric moved first. One moment Malrek was fleeing, the next he slammed into stone. Gasps exploded through the chamber. Aldric stood over him, terrifying, certain. Malrek tried to rise. Aldric drove him back down, hard. No one intervened. No one dared. Because everyone understood. This wasn't vengeance. It was judgment. 18 years overdue. Aldric leaned down. His voice remained calm, deadly calm. "You murdered a king." Malrek trembled. "You murdered a queen." Another tremor. "You hunted a child." Fear flooded the former ruler's face. Then came the final words. "And you attacked my people." Everyone knew what he meant. Frostmir, Lyanna, Seraphine, his family. For the first time in decades, Lord Malrek Vale looked truly afraid. Good, he should. History turned that day, not because Malrek fell, because the truth stood unbroken, unburied, unafraid. By nightfall, the throne stood empty. The crown rested upon a velvet cushion, waiting, and eventually every eye turned toward Seraphine, the last heir of House Vale, the rightful queen, the woman who could claim everything. The throne was hers, if she wanted it. Seraphine looked at the crown. then at the pendant resting in her hands. The final gift of Queen Celeste. The final promise of House Vale. And suddenly she wasn't thinking about power. She was thinking about people. Thomas Ashe, Commander Benedict Ashcombe, King Rowan Vale, Queen Celeste Vale, Evie, Mira, Leanna, Ilara, Garrick, Aldrich. The people who carried her when crowns could not. The people who chose her long before they knew she was a princess. Chapter 19. The Queen Who Changed the Crown. The great hall stood silent. Thousands waited. At the center of the chamber, Seraphine Vale held the silver pendant, the final gift of her mother, the last surviving symbol of House Vale. Before her sat the throne King Rowan Vale had once occupied, the throne Lord Melrek Vale had stolen, the throne bought with betrayal, blood, and 18 years of lies. Every eye in the kingdom watched, waiting, hoping, fearing. An elder stepped forward. Seraphine Vale, the name echoed through the hall. The throne of Aurelian is yours by right. Will you accept the crown? The question settled over the chamber. Heavy, final. Seraphine looked toward the throne, then beyond it, toward the people. She saw Mira among the Ashmore delegation, tears in her eyes. Martha, weighed down by regret. Tristan, silent and accepting whatever answer came. Across the hall, a small figure stood on tiptoe between the Ashmore delegation. Evie, older than the little girl who had stood crying in a farmhouse doorway years ago. Yet her amber eyes looked exactly the same. The moment Seraphine's gaze found her, Evie broke into a tearful smile, then raised both hands and waved furiously, as though she had never stopped waiting for her to come home. Seraphine felt her throat tighten, because long before kingdoms chose her, a little girl already had. Also, Garrick, Ilara, Lyanna, and finally, Aldrich, standing among the alphas, tall and still beneath the golden light. The kingdom saw a queen. Aldrich saw Seraphine. The realization steadied her. She climbed the steps slowly, every footfall echoing through history itself. At the top, she turned to face the kingdom. "I accept." Cheers exploded across the hall, thousands of voices, applause, relief, victory. When the noise finally faded, Seraphine lifted her hand. The hall quieted immediately. "My uncle wanted this throne." Silence returned. "He murdered for it. He betrayed his king, his family, and his people." Her gaze swept across the chamber. "If one man can destroy a kingdom..." She raised the crown, then the kingdom was built incorrectly. The statement stunned the room. Nobles exchanged glances. Alphys leaned forward, interested. "I will be queen," she said, "but never the kind of queen who rules alone." The hall froze. "The power that allowed Lord Melrek Vale to rise ends today." Then she outlined her vision. Pact councils, regional representation, shared governance, accountability, a kingdom where no ruler could ever again become another Melrek. The hall listened, at first uncertain, then intrigued, then inspired. When she finished, silence lingered, not because they disagreed, because they understood. For the first time in generations, the kingdom had been offered something better. An old alpha from the Western Territory stood first. He struck his fist against his chest. A gesture of loyalty, another followed, then another. Then a small voice broke through the emotion. "That's my family." The room turned. Lyanna stood proudly beside Ilara, completely serious. Several nobles immediately lost their battle against laughter. Even Garrick smiled. Seraphine laughed too, and the tension in the hall finally eased. Then her eyes found Aldrich. Everything else disappeared. For 6 years he had lived beside grief. For 6 years he had survived rather than lived. And somehow, despite everything, he had chosen her. Slowly, Aldrich stepped forward. The hall watched in silence as the broken Alpha King climbed the steps and stopped beside his queen. He looked only at her. Then, before the entire kingdom, he took her hand. A simple gesture, yet it felt larger than every speech spoken that day, because everyone understood what it meant. The Alpha King stood beside her. Publicly, proudly, without hesitation, the hall erupted. Louder than before, stronger than before, a kingdom celebrating not only a queen, but a future. Far beyond crowns and victory, four graves rested beneath the spring sky. King Rowan Vale, Queen Celeste Vale, Thomas Ashe, Commander Benedict Ashcombe, the people who sacrificed everything so this day could exist. Though none could see it, their promise had finally been fulfilled. For the first time in 18 years, Aurelian belonged to the right hands, and for the first time in her life, Seraphine Vale stood exactly where she was meant to be, not because fate demanded it, because she earned it. Epilogue. The first spring. Spring arrived quietly. The snow retreated from the valleys, wildflowers returned to the hills, and streams ran freely through Frostmere once more. Children raced through the village square, merchants argued cheerfully over prices, and laughter drifted from open windows. Life continued. Several years had passed, enough for grief to soften and hope to take root. Seraphine stood on the porch watching sunlight spill across the valley. The silver pendant rested against her throat. She wore it often, not because she was queen, but because she was Celeste's daughter. Familiar arms wrapped around her waist, Aldric, warm, strong, safe. He rested his forehead lightly against hers. "You're hiding." "I was enjoying the view." "The council arrives in an hour." "Ah, there it is." Her laughter came easily now. Aldric had changed too. He was still feared, still dangerous, still capable of silencing a room with a single look. But warmth lived beneath the winter now. Later that week, Seraphine returned to Ashmore. The village seemed smaller than she remembered, its roads narrower and buildings older. Whether Ashmore had changed or she had, she couldn't tell. People recognized her immediately, but the whispers carried respect now. That afternoon, a familiar voice rang across the square. "Seraphine!" Evie came running. Older now, taller than the little girl from that snowy winter, yet her bright amber eyes hadn't changed at all. She threw herself into Seraphine's arms, then suddenly froze. "Wait!" Her gaze dropped to the wooden wolf hanging from Seraphine's traveling bag. The same crooked ears, the same oversized tail, the same gift. Evie's eyes widened. "You kept it." The whisper nearly broke Seraphine's heart. She lifted the carving gently. Years had smoothed the wood, but not the meaning behind it. "I carried it everywhere." Tears filled Evie's eyes. "Really?" Seraphine nodded. "When I crossed the mountains, when I was afraid, when I felt alone." Her fingers tightened around the little wolf. "You gave it to me so I wouldn't be alone." Her voice softened. "It worked." Evie burst into tears and hugged her again. And at last, the goodbye from that winter morning received its ending. Before leaving Ashmore, Seraphine made one final stop. The cemetery. Four graves rested beneath blooming spring flowers. King Rowan Vale, Queen Celeste Vale, Thomas Ashe, Commander Benedict Ashcombe, the people who sacrificed everything so she could stand where she was now. For a long time she stood in silence. Then she knelt and laid flowers before each grave. The silver pendant glimmered softly against her throat as the wind stirred the grass around her. The world felt peaceful. "Thank you." Two simple words, a lifetime of gratitude. When she finally rose, she didn't look back. Not because she had forgotten, because she no longer needed to stay. The past had shaped her. It no longer owned her. Home was waiting.